Hey Songtown, here with Clay Mills in the Songtown studio. Today we're going to talk about some books that have been influential to us as songwriters.
Three books.
So, Clay, you want to kick us off?
Yes. For me, the first one is going to be not actually a songwriting book, but when I read it, I was like, holy smokes. It really like dawned on me how much being an author was like being a songwriter. Like it's like two parallel tracks. Mm-hmm. And the thing that struck me first was his work ethic. He literally, to support his family, worked three jobs. He would come home at night tired. He would write, and he was dedicated to writing every day. You know, and I think as writers, you and I, we went through that where we were working jobs to try to pay the bills and take care of families. But we also, every spare second, we were writing songs. You know, I remember when I was living in New York City, even on my lunch breaks, I would go into a broom closet and go in there, and I had a guitar that I hid in there so they couldn't see me. they didn't know that I was a songwriter, and I would be in there writing songs on my lunch break, you know?
So you were a closet songwriter.
I literally wrote songs in a closet.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Another thing he talks about is rejection, and that is something that songwriters have to be able to deal with. I mean, I don't know how many times my songs have been rejected, thousands of times. And I mean,
even after you've written hits.
Yeah.
And you still get rejected all the time.
One of my number one songs, before it was number one, I pitched it to a producer in town, and he sent me a page long email telling me how much he hated it and that it would never work and people are tired of that kind of thing, and that later goes on to become a number one song.
Exactly.
So you have to be able to take rejection if you're going to be a songwriter or a writer. And he talks about hundreds of rejection letters he got with his manuscripts and that kind of thing.
Yeah, but I don't think you should take that as, see, my songs that maybe aren't great yet, see, people don't like them, but I know they're hits. You got to also be honest with yourself. If you get a bunch of people telling you the same thing, that your songs aren't ready yet, then you need to listen to that, you know, because ultimately, I'm sure that song that he trashed, there were some other people that liked the song. So that's a little mm-hmm. different story.
Yeah. And I learned about rejection first in high school, asking girls out, you know, so you can take that practice wherever you got it and apply it to your songwriting life.
Yeah. The third one, and maybe I'll let you do this one because you're the lyric meister. But even through melody, through melody, I have to do this, is show, don't tell. And I think for him, when he's writing a line in his book, he doesn't just want to write a line of what happened. He wants to show what happened. He wants you to be visual. He wants to pull you in emotionally. Mm-hmm. Music can do that too. Music can pull you in. It can be grand, sweeping music that inspires you, or it can be sad, somber music that makes you cry a little bit. There's a lot of emotion in music, but tell us from a lyric standpoint, maybe how you go about showing people with words rather than telling them.
Yeah, you know, if you, like you mentioned, if you just are saying, well, this happened, and then this happened, and then this happened, at some point we go, okay. You know, that's enough of this list of things that happened. So what you want to do is you want to paint pictures, and then you want to tell us why those pictures matter. You know, so you paint pictures of a scene of what's happening, then you tell us, well, what's the emotional impact of that to the singer or to the person being sung to and that kind of thing.
Yeah, so viewers have said you can't quote your Billy Currington song anymore, but I can quote it. And the line, like, deep blue needs you eyes, to me, that says so much in just a few words that I feel like I'm there with the person and she's about to plant a big kiss on me.
Mm-hmm. Yes, she is. Yeah. So now that's a great example of, you know, how you can sometimes do that. It's like, instead of just saying, then she was about to kiss me, yeah. you know, then she looked at me in this certain way. And, right. and we know what that means, you know.
Yeah, she gave you those deep blue, need you eyes. And you know what's about to happen without saying, she's about to come over here and lay one on me.
Exactly.
So what's the next one?
The next one is cut 10%.
Yeah, at least.
And I think the principle that applies, you know, he was talking about in his manuscripts of getting rid of the fluff. I think the principle that applies in songwriting is go through your song and see if there's anything that doesn't matter. Like if that line was not there, would it matter? You know, if this piece of information was there, not there, would it matter?
Yeah, I can agree with that. And I think that's part of what, for me, I think a lot of that, when I look at something that's not working, I try to go back and go, okay, I've got four lines here. I really can say these, what I said in four lines, I could say in two. And yeah. so then maybe I only use half a verse for the second verse because mm-hmm. I don't need to do a whole verse. I don't have that much to say. Yeah. So if I can cut those four down to two and get to the chorus quicker, that might be one case where cutting some of the fluff out yeah. works a lot.
I call that the economy of words. Like, you know, treat your song as if you can, you know, you don't get paid by the word. You get paid by being concise.
Yeah.
You know, and you want to say what you want need to say in the least possible words.
Yeah, and that comes to the next point. It leads well into, Stephen has this idea of clarity trumps cleverness. And we've talked about that a lot in Songtown, yeah. how being clear about what you're wanting to say and being real is more important than being clever.
Yeah.
You know, because a lot of times when writers hear the word clever, they go, but I want to be clever. I want to say something in a different way. That's not really what we mean when we say clever. Clever is when you're saying something and it sounds like, oh, a songwriter wrote that and they're trying to be clever. And it comes across as a little phony mm-hmm. rather than being real and from the heart.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, an example from the past that worked but probably wouldn't work now is, if I said you had a beautiful body, would you hold it against me? When you hear that, it's funny and it's cute, but at the end of the day, you've heard it four or five times and you're like, okay, the joke was funny the first time, but it's not necessarily funny the fifth time.
And it's probably why that style of song isn't popular today, because once you hear it, yeah, you've heard it, you chuckled, you laughed, and then you're over it. You know, that was a great song.
Yeah, it was.
But I think the trick is when you are being clever like that, you got to back it up with something that's really great. But we don't see titles like that as often anymore. So yeah. I don't know, maybe they'll come back and we'll change this. We'll go... three things we were wrong about in the past.
Exactly. Yeah.
But for now, for the last 20 years, it's been mostly real, and clarity beats this cleverness idea.
Yeah, and I mean, I mentor people too, that every single song they're trying to be clever, or they're using wordplay or a double meaning of a word.
They're trying to impress you
yeah.
rather than make you feel something.
Yeah. And that's the thing I encourage them to do. When I see those songs, I'm like, take a break from this for a minute and write this song in a serious way, you know, mm-hmm. or a heartfelt way. Yeah. Try the same song, you know, instead of being clever, be more heartfelt or more emotional with it.
Exactly. What's the next one from Stephen?
The next one is read a lot, write a lot.
Yes.
It always amazes me when writers say, and I know we're going to have people out there saying, I don't ever read. But if for me personally, I can only speak for me, if I'm not taking in great writing, it's harder to put out great writing. And I think the more that I digest of great authors and great quotes and things like that, the more I have to say and the more different ways I can think to say things.
So your Facebook feed is not good reading?
No. Not usually.
No, I hear a lot of songwriting, a lot of great songwriters that say that is that not just with the reading, but listening. You know, I'm surprised that I'll run into songwriters in Songtown that say, well, I only listened to music from, you know, when I was growing up back in the 80s or the 90s. I'm like, well, that's great, but what are you doing to feed new stuff? You know, you're constantly got to take in new material just so you can grow and feel inspired.
Yeah, absolutely.
So enough of Stephen. Let's talk about another book.
Okay. Well, okay, and I don't like the title of this book, but it was very influential to me.
Okay.
And it's called How to Make a Good Song a Hit Song by Molly Ann Lichen. But really what the book is about is not so much having a hit song on the radio, is about how to make a good song a great song. And so there's a lot of things in here about rewriting. There's a lot of stuff in here about how to think about your song after you've written and you go back to edit, that kind of stuff. And so it was very influential on me just because that rewriting, I think a lot of times in the beginning of my career, I had the impression that, well, you just write the song and then you come back, and if there's any glaring errors, you fix them. And, you know, so I think after I read this book, I'm like, oh my goodness, I've been overlooking some really important things that I need to check in my song.
Yeah. And I think people would be surprised. Even they'll quote, well, what about those great songs like Leonard Cohen wrote Hallelujah? He wrote like dozens of verses for that song before he narrowed it down to what was the most important, you know? So rewriting can be, especially on a song like that, that is so fantabulous. That's a word.
Holy smokes.
Word of the day, fantabulous.
And holy smokes.
Holy smokes. When you got a song that's that deep and works on so many levels, I mean, the chords, the actual minor and major chords are shifting as he says the words minor and major chords. Like everything is just, you know, intricate. So yeah, that took a bit of rewriting to write that song. So
yeah, and Hugh Prestwood, who wrote many, many hits, was telling me one time, he said, I can write a song fairly quickly, but it takes me a month to rewrite it. And he would turn in about a song a month to his publisher, and they would get them cut, and lots of them would be hits, you know.
So I have a story about that.
Tell us.
Hugh taught a class at the New School of Music in New York City. When I lived there, I didn't take his class, but a friend of mine was in his class, and he said that each week Hugh would bring in a song that he was working on, and it would be the first draft, and he would play it for the class, and the class would point out holes in the song. And he said the thing that made Hugh so incredible is he would come back the next week with fixes, but he would fix them in a way that none of them even saw coming. Like it would blow their mind. And he said he literally would work on a song with his class for the whole course.
Oh, wow.
And so there's a lot of rewrites. But he said the guy, it wasn't so much the fact that he rewrote, but just how he rewrote was no, they were all good writers in the class. I mean, the guy told me he was a great writer. But he said that what Hugh would bring back the next week would just blow his mind, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I just think that he's often cited as one of the greatest all time in the country genre. And he rewrote all the time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I think one thing I see when I'm mentored a lot of times too is people, when they're rewriting, they're just making it different. They're not making it better.
Yes.
And that's what this book helped me learn how to do, is to make it better. Like, not just how to, you know, if somebody says, well, I don't like that line, and I just changed the line. Didn't make it any better, you know. So I think the thought process of this book is really helpful in that regard.
Yeah.
And we got one more book to talk about.
I love it.
This is a classic. Mm-hmm. I don't know how long this has been around, but it's called The Craft of Lyric Writing.
Yes.
By Sheila Davis. You want to talk about what your impressions of that book were?
Well, first, let me tell you that Sheila, years ago in New York City, I was able to take a class from her, and I learned a lot. And that book, basically, I came at songwriting when I was young from a very chord and melody approach. And her, when it came time, I knew I needed help in lyric writing. And she laid out all the things, I think it was like 15 chapters or so, all the things in lyric writing that you should be paying attention to and be aware of. And at that time, I was very resistant to people telling me how to write a song. Like I was, you know, I'm my own thing. I was going to be original. No one was going to tell me. But for some reason, her book, it got into me. Like, you know, and it in a way that it made sense to me. And so lyric writing, in fact, when she did revisions of the book later, she put one of my songs, Beautiful Mess, as an example of an oxymoron title. But basically, she just went through and talked about things like what makes a great title, what she went through into rhyming. I mean, just everything that a lyric writer needs to know on a basic level.
Yeah. I mean, to me, she touched on all the fundamentals. If you want to be a great lyric writer, she got all the fundamentals. But the thing I loved about the book was it caused me to think differently about rhyme and about different techniques with songwriting, because she would introduce a technique and then she would say, like, the oxymoron title.
Right.
And then she would show you different examples of how that had been used.
And I didn't ever realize that was a thing.
Yeah.
Like, I knew it, but I never, like, consciously thought, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In fact, after I read her book, I went out and researched books on oxymorons because, and I got tons of titles from those books because I would go through and go, oh, that's really interesting. I could change that in this way and make a cool title out of it, you know.
She also had a thing in there where she said the three most common words were if, night, and heart. Those were the three most common words in song titles, hit song titles, from, I guess, at the point she wrote the book, going back in history. So the next day I read that, and the next day I went to write with Mark Irwin, and I said, well, these are the three most important words, if, night, and heart. So I said, I got a title, If the Night Had a Heart. And so that was like one of the first songs that Mark and I wrote together. It was funny.
I thought you were going to say you wrote If Night Heart. That would have been great. But that, you know, so...
If the Night Had a Heart, it could be K-N-I.
Ooh, yeah.
K-N-I-G-H-T.
Yeah.
If the, you know, the knight in shining armor had a heart, but that's not what this was about.
Oh, cool. Thanks for clarifying. But anyway, if you are a lyricist, that is a great book to just kind of get you into the fundamentals of it.
I got an important message. Guys, next week, 9 a.m. Central Time, we're going to do a live podcast for you. We've never done this.
We're scared.
Yeah, so we're terrified. No, we're going to answer your questions that you have. So join us. Put in the chat if you got any questions. We'll have a topic we're going to talk about, but we also want to get to know you guys better. You've been a great community, and so we feel like this would be a way we can get to know you a lot better.
How can they find us? So let's say they're listening on Spotify. How can they find this live?
Go to YouTube and check out Songtown USA on YouTube. Subscribe. You'll get a little notification if you subscribe and hit the dingy bell. Is that a new word too? Dingy bell?
I don't know. I hope not.
I want to be a bell dinger.
I think you are. Thanks for being here.
On that note, we're out of here.
See you soon.
Cheers.
Hey, thanks for watching. If you appreciate the content, hit the subscribe button and help us grow. Shout out to Sweetwater Music. It's where Marty and I get all our musical gear. Great people. We'll see you guys around town. Right on.